And that through this, you are of great benefit to all of the limitless number of sentient beings. And now from the accounts of how the Lord of Yogis, Milarepa, bound harmful spirits under oath in order to be of benefit to the teachings and to sentient beings, we have the story of Milarepa gathering wood, or as it's also known, the story of the song Six Ways of Remembering the Lama. Please now listen to the story and sing the songs. And for those of you who might not have been here the first couple of days, when we get to a song, then I'll sing a few lines alone to give you an idea of the melody, and then we'll all start over together from the beginning.
Namo Guru. At Garuda Fortress in Chonglung, Jitsun Milarepa, the Lord of Yogis, was abiding in the luminous clarity of Mahamudra. At one point, he rose from his meditation in order to prepare a meal, not to mention there being no sampa, salt, butter, or meat. There was not even any wood to prepare a fire, or even any water to boil. My renunciation is too strong, Milarepa thought, and he went out of the cave to gather some wood. As soon as he had filled the apron of his cotton robe with sticks, the wind suddenly started blowing very hard. When he held onto his robe to keep it from blowing off, the wind snatched away the wood. When he held the wood, the wind grabbed at his robe. Milarepa thought, I have been meditating in mountain retreats for this long, and still have not abandoned ego clinging. What is the point of Dharma and meditation practice that do not get rid of ego clinging? And then he said aloud, if you would like this cotton robe, take it. If you would like this wood, take it. I renounce them both. Then his lack of sustenance overcame him and he fainted, remaining unconscious for a short time. By the time he woke up, the wind had calmed down, and he saw his robe dangling from a branch high in a tree. With his heart filled with sadness, Milarepa sat down on the flat top of a rock the size of a sheep and rested in equipoise. He looked to the east, and in the direction of Jowalung, he saw a white cloud floating in the sky. Under that cloud is the Dharma land of Jowalung, where my Lama, Marpa the translator, resides, Milarepa thought. And he remembered the times he spent with his enlightened lord and lady, and how his Lama used to give explanations of the tantras, empowerments, and practice instructions to Milarepa and his Vajra brothers and sisters. How I would like to meet him now, Milarepa thought. And on top of his earlier sadness, his powerfully vivid memories of the Lama brought immeasurable sorrow to his heart. Weeping many tears, he sang this song of six ways of remembering the Lama as an expression of his sorrow and longing.
Marpa, kind father, who clears away my sorrow, this beggar has a sad song to sing to you, my Lord. In the sky to the east of these red rocks of Chonglung, a white rain cloud is floating silently. And down where that cloud now casts its shadow is the great Dharma realm of Jowalung. The mountain behind is like a mighty elephant, the mountain in front like a great lion, and on high on a throne made of stone from the heavens, on a soft deerskin seat, who doth reside. Marpa, kind father, who clears away my sorrow, this beggar has a sad song to sing to you, my Lord. In the sky to the east of these red rocks of Chonglung, a white rain cloud is floating silently. And down where that cloud now casts its shadow is the great Dharma realm of Drovolung. The mountain behind is like a mighty elephant, the mountain in front like a great lion, and on high on a throne made of stone from the heavens, on a soft deerskin seat, who doth reside. The king who sits there is the translator Marpa. If I were there now, how happy I would be. Though my devotion is weak, oh, how I wish to meet him. Though my longing is slight, I wish to meet him so. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. Noble lady, dark Mema, dearer than my mother, if I could meet you now, how happy I would be. Though it's so far away, oh, how I wish to see her. Though the journey would be hard, I wish to see her so. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. The four abhishekas of the whispered lineage, when bestowed through secret symbols, what a wondrous joy. Though I could not offer much, I still yearn to request them. Though I could not be their sponsor, but I long to receive them so. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. The profound tantra of the glorious Evajra, when explained by my master, what a supreme joy. Though my prajna is slight, I still long to request it. Though my faculties are dull, I still yearn to hear it so. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. The profound practice teachings of Naropa's six dharmas, if I could hear them now, how happy I would be. Though my courage is slight, I still long for these teachings. Though my diligence is weak, I wish to practice them so. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. All my dear Dharma friends who have gathered there in faith, if I could meet you now, how happy I would be.
My experience is poor and I've no realization. I don't know much, but I'd still love to discuss Dharma with you. Whenever I think it is of the great Lama, when I meditate, I remember Marpa. Though my devotion knows well that you never leave this beggar, remembering you, Lama, from deep down in my heart, makes me wish to see you so that I cannot bear this torment. The pain in my chest steals away my breath and speech. Father so kind, please assuage your child's sorrow. Kindest one of all, make my sadness go away.
After Milarepa finished singing, he had a vision. On top of that very same cloud, which now looked as if it were draped in silk banners, brilliant with the five colors, was Lord Marpa, radiant with even more splendor and glory than ever before, riding towards him on a white lion, bedecked with many jewels. "Son, great magician," Marpa boomed, "why do you call me with such intense longing? Have you lost your confidence in the Lama, Yidams, and rare and supreme ones? Are your thoughts fixating on adverse conditions? Has the obstacle of the eight worldly dharmas entered your retreat? Is the demon of hope and fear disturbing your mind and making you sad? Or are you serving the Lama and rare and supreme ones above, being generous with the sentient beings of the six realms below, and meeting with the harmonious conditions for purifying negativity and obscurations, and giving rise to positive qualities in between? Whatever it is, there is no way that you and I could ever be separated. So get on with your practice so that you can be of benefit to the Buddhist teachings and to sentient beings." This experience so completely filled Milarepa with joy that it was almost too much for him to bear. In response to it, he sang this Vajra song.
Now I've seen the face of my father Guru, heard his enlightened speech, and this beggar's anguish has turned to bliss in a most wonderful experience. Remembering the Lama's example of the path to liberation, devotion and realization I find are rising up from a deep inside. The blessing of his great compassion has entered into me, and everything that is not Dharma I have left behind so easily. Now I've seen the face of my father Guru, heard his enlightened speech, and this beggar's anguish has turned to bliss in a most wonderful experience. Remembering the Lama's example of the path to liberation, devotion and realization I find are rising up from deep inside. The blessing of his great compassion has entered into me, and everything that is not Dharma I have left behind so easily. I sang a sad song because I missed the Guru and it hurt the Jetsons' ears, but I couldn't help it and I'll do it again. Please hold me in your great compassion. I have heart-bone diligence in my practice. I'm not deterred by pain. This is how I offer my service to and please my father Guru. When I'm wandering from retreat to retreat, I travel on my own. This is how I serve and how I please the flying lady Dakinis. I'm not concerned for my own welfare. True Dharma is all I do. To the Buddha's teachings, this is the way I offer service night and day.
In all I do, I practice the Dharma, and I'll practice it my whole life. This is the way I am generous with sentient beings protectorless. I've got a heart bone that's happy when I'm sick and that feels delighted to die. This is the broom that sweeps away the bad things I've done and my obscurations. Austerity is the way I live, won't do wrong even for my food. This is the conducive condition for experience and realization. The way I repay my Father Lama's kindness is with my practice. Lord Guru, please sustain your son with your great and noble compassion. Please bless this beggar that he will keep to his practice deep in mountain retreat. To his practice deep in mountain retreat. To his practice deep in mountain retreat.
So Milarepa sang, and invigorated with joy, he retrieved his robe, picked up some pieces of wood, and returned to his retreat cave. When he arrived, he found that five iron atsaras with gaping wide eyes the size of soup bowls had entered the cave. One was sitting on the Jetson's bed, teaching the Dharma, and two others were listening to him. Another one was preparing food, and another was ruffling through some texts. At first, Milarepa was startled. Then he thought, the local deities must be unhappy and have sent these magical emanations. Wherever I stay and practice, I never have any torment to offer, but I do offer praises of the place and its gods. I should offer a praise of this place now. Then he sang this Vajra song of praise.
This song has one melody for the first verse and another one for the verses that follow, so I'll sing two verses and then we'll start together.
Emma, this secluded retreat in the mountains is a place one can find enlightenment. The Siddhas of old bless this place with their practice. This sacred place where I stay on my own. Nestled in the red rocks of Chonglung is this fortress lair of Garuda. Above rain clouds are circling, below are rivers flowing, in between the vultures are soaring. Over Chonglung's red rock hill. Emma, this secluded retreat in the mountains is a place one can find enlightenment. The Siddhas of old bless this place with their practice, this sacred place where I stay on my own. Nestled in the red rocks of Chonglung is this fortress lair of Garuda. Above rain clouds are circling, below are rivers flowing, in between the vultures are soaring over Chonglung's red rock hills. In meadows the plants are blooming, in the forest the trees are dancing, the bumblebees are buzzing in Chonglung's red rock hills. The flowers' sweet smell wafts chillily, the bird's sweet song goes kyururu. Chilili. Chonglong's Red Rock Hills. The birds fly high to make their wings strong. The monkeys jump to make themselves strong. The deer run fast to make their legs strong, and I train making both bodhicittas strong. I'm friend with the local guardians, so all you goblins gathered here, drink this nectar of love and compassion and return from whence you came.
When the Jitsun sang this, the Atsuras displayed blatant contempt for him and flashed angry-looking glances at each other. Then all of a sudden, two more Atsuras appeared, making seven in all. Some of them scowled and bit their lower lip. Some gnashed their teeth and bared their fangs, and some laughed and made menacing sounds. Then they gathered together and began to stab and swipe at the air in threatening gestures. These spirits are beginning to make obstacles, the Jetson thought. He glared at them fiercely and recited wrathful mantras, but the Atsuras did not flee. Then,
I'm friend with the local guardians, so all you goblins gathered here, drink this nectar of love and compassion and return from whence you came.
When the Jitsun sang this, the Atsuras displayed blatant contempt for him and flashed angry-looking glances at each other. Then all of a sudden, two more Atsuras appeared, making seven in all. Some of them scowled and bit their lower lip. Some gnashed their teeth and bared their fangs, and some laughed and made menacing sounds. Then they gathered together and began to stab and swipe at the air in threatening gestures. These spirits are beginning to make obstacles, the Jetson thought. He glared at them fiercely and recited wrathful mantras, but the Atsuras did not flee. Then great compassion filled his heart, and he gave them a Dharma teaching, but still they did not go. Finally, Milarepa thought, Marpa of Lodrak pointed out all phenomena to be my own mind, and mind itself to be the union of luminous clarity and emptiness. I have cut through all doubts about this, and am certain it is true. If I now cling to these obstructing demons as existing outside, what good is all the difficulty I have put myself through in my retreats? Fearless confidence arose within him, and he sang this Vajra song of having confidence in the view.
Father, you vanquished the army of the four Maras. Marpa, the translator, at your feet I bow. We of the human race call ourselves human beings, but I was born to a white snow lioness. In my mother's womb, my three energies became complete, and as a baby lion cub, I slept in a den. As a lion youth, outside our door, I stood on guard. Now that I'm fully grown, out in the snow I roam. Let the snow swirl in a storm, even blizzards don't make me afraid. Let crevices be steep and deep, they do not worry me. Father, you vanquished the army of the four Maras. Marpa, the translator, at your feet I bow. We of the human race call ourselves human beings, but I was born to a white snow lioness. In my mother's womb, my three energies became complete, and as a baby lion cub, I slept in our den. As a lion youth, outside our door, I stood on guard. Now that I'm fully grown, out in the snow I roam. Let the snow swirl in a storm, even blizzards don't make me afraid.
Let crevices be steep and deep, they do not worry me. We of the human race call ourselves human beings, but I was born to a royal Garuda clan. While I was in my egg, my two wings grew strong and feathers sleek, and as a Garuda chick, I slept in a nest. As a Garuda youth, outside the nest, I stood on guard. Now that I'm fully grown, throughout the skies I soar. So let the skies be vast, I am not afraid to fly afar. And let the canyons be narrow, they do not worry me. We of the human race call ourselves human beings, but I was born to a great whale family. In my mother's womb, my bright golden eyes began to gleam, and when I was a baby whale, I slept in our cove. As a whale youth, I swam out front to lead the school. Now that I'm fully grown, I swim to the ocean's ends. So let the waves be big and rough, I am unafraid. Let there be lots of hooks and nets, they do not worry me. We of the human race call ourselves human beings. But I am the son of the Kagyu Gurus. In my mother's womb is where faith arose in me. And as a baby Kagyupa, I entered Dharma's door. As a Kagyu youth, I studied at my Lama's feet. Now as a grown great meditator, I wander in mountain retreats. So let the violent demon rage, I am unafraid. Let the spirits play their many tricks, they do not worry me. When a lion roams through snow, the lion's paws do not get cold. If a lion's paws got cold when roaming through the snow, it would not be of much use to have strong body, speech, and mind. When Garudas fly high in the sky, they do not fall down. If while flying high, a great Garuda fell to earth, having giant wings would be of little benefit. When a whale leaps, the waves can't push it around. If the waves could really push around a big strong whale, being born in the sea wouldn't be of much benefit. A stone cannot cut a great rock made of iron ore. If a stone could cut through a rock of iron ore, refining it down into iron wouldn't be of much use. I, Milarepa, am not afraid of demons. If a demon could really frighten Milarepa, although this yogi realized reality's true nature, his realization would be of little use. Listen, band of demons, goblins, ghouls, and spirits, if more of you could come now, wouldn't that be wonderful? Please don't rush away, won't you stay here for a while? We could have such an interesting little chat. If you must go soon, please at least just spend the night. We can have fun contests of body, speech, and mind. We can see the difference between virtue and non-virtue. I just won't let you leave until you've made an obstacle. If you cannot make even one tiny obstacle, think of how embarrassed you'll be to have shown up here.
When Milarepa finished singing, he was filled with the pride of his realization, and he barged straight into the middle of the circle of Atsaras. The Atsaras were terrified. Their eyes darted back and forth, and their bodies shook so much that everything in the cave suddenly started to vibrate. In a flash, they all dissolved into one, and that one was carried away by a swirling wind until he too completely disappeared. The Jitsun's enlightened intention was, this was the work of Binayaka, king of obstructing spirits. He tried to do me harm, and the wind that blew away my robe and wood was his mischief too. The Lama's great compassion, though, prevented him from hurting me. The whole incident provided an inconceivable enhancement to Milarepa's practice and realization. Thus ends the story that is called either the Song of Six Ways of Remembering the Lama, sung as a result of meeting Binayaka, king of obstructing spirits, or the Red Rocks of Chonglung, or the Story of Milarepa Gathering Wood. These three titles refer to the same series of events. May everything be positive.
Before listening to the teachings, please give rise to the supreme motivation of bodhicitta, which means that for the benefit of our friends, our enemies, and all sentient beings, we will listen to, reflect upon, and meditate on the teachings of the genuine Dharma with all the enthusiasm we can muster in our hearts.
Tene dalam rabzi chu jeba theba ta pare tan do yin de da rabzi jin de de so chiran so kale lo ko do ne ta da do de te ju bin.
We will pick up now with chapter 14, an examination of contact, and the basis for this and the remaining chapters that comes from the sutras and the reason why Nagarjuna composed this chapter, these are all explained very clearly in the Sun of Wisdom. You should read them at your leisure and come to understand them that way. I will instead focus on presenting the essence of each chapter's meaning.
Tene ton tambaram yang da ba treba ma ba malam da bore. Malam to taza zog na dong tam re, denba ma re. Tene tanda tawa meke namba meke wangbo ya na dong tam re, tende nang tam re. Tene tawa po tang, tawa po da chan tende nang tam yin na yang. Tene mune tepe na wang khara, tepe na wang khara. Tawa po taza, tawa. Tava posom, Demba tropata to Nankin Dembar Kina Yang, Ton Tambarang Yang, Taba Dembar Madropa, Rankinja Madropa, Consul to Tender Nang Sare, Teta Vishikoto. Name Nawaya and Tenda, Teta Chekwashikoto.
This chapter examines the contact between the object of sense perception, for example, a form that you see, and the eye that sees the form, and the individual who perceives it. You could call the third one the consciousness, the eye consciousness, or the individual. Here we'll stick with the individual. And the point is to see that this appearance of the meeting between the object and the sense faculty and the individual is just a mere appearance. It's contact that does not occur in genuine reality. And in this way, it is like the appearance of sense contact, sense perception that occurs in a dream. Because in a dream, the form that we see is just a mere appearance. There's nothing really there. And the eye that perceives that form is also just a mere dependently arisen appearance. It doesn't truly exist. And the individual who sees the form is also just a mere appearance and does not truly exist, just a dependently arisen mere appearance. So even though all of that is of the nature of dependently arisen mere appearance, when we don't know we're dreaming, We think that it's real, and we cling to it as being truly existent. So what we have to see is that this contact does not truly exist, that the contact that appears in the dream is just a mere appearance that is not really happening at all between three entities that are conventionally just mere appearances that don't truly exist. And we have to see that the daytime experience of sense contact is just like in the dream. It is a relative mere appearance that arises due to causes and conditions that has no true existence at all in genuine reality. The contact between form and the eye sense faculty and the one who sees, when we don't analyze their true nature, our experience of them is just like our experience of them in a dream when we don't know that we're dreaming. They appear to be real, we think that they are real, and we have experiences of them that seem to confirm that they are real. That's how it's experienced when there's no analysis. When we do use our prajna, our precise knowledge, to analyze the true nature of all of these, we find that these three entities and the contact between them does not exist at all. And when we thoroughly analyze, we find that their nature and the nature of the contact is beyond the ideas of existence and non-existence both.
Tene chonga pa ngopo to ngume am rangin la ta ba la de tanda papa kataya na la dambe doi chike yure o te karche more chindu gre chom de ngu da ngume da chebe kataya na dangwa lene yeba da meba ni ga ga kwan je sumbo.
On page 95, there is an important verse from chapter 15, which is the examination of things and the absence of things. And I would like to give you the reading transmission for this verse. In his pith instructions to Katyayana, the one who knows all things and all absences of things, the transcendent conqueror, refuted both existence and non-existence.
Tene kata yene lonte nyintu deba chobje tamje je kelembe yo longi beseno tene nyintu pa namje tonye kelembe chedo kelingu be chedo tene longde tamare.
The pith instructions to Katyayana comes from the Shravakayana cycle of teachings of the Buddha, and therefore all 18 sub-schools of the Shravakayana must assert its validity. And it is a teaching about emptiness. And that's why Nagarjuna quotes it, to demonstrate to those who follow the Shravakayana that they too must assert that the Buddha gave teachings, that the Buddha himself was the one who gave teachings about emptiness, because he did so in their very cycle of teachings.
Katayana in the Villong, Dama, Chisave, Dole, Katayana, Kangas and Jigdin de Napache, Yobata, Mebanila, Denbari Kimbe, Wangi, Denbari Kimbe, Tina, Chevata, Gavata, Navata, Chevata, Nyangita, Nyangan, Dombata, Dong Narvata, Yi Medevata, Chupa, Tale, Yonzo, Trover Major. Chebe dong dongale yonzo toro majoro hi songbe yeba da meba niga gakban zeta zeba yino. Tene yeme jenta niga gakbare yeme jenta tamje gakba ne long ta do tuja de tena babare. Tisena de nitu deba tamje ju tumung toke lembe long yembe sena de tamare. Ta nitu so tekba chimbe tuni jikeba de.
So And below this verse, we have the actual quotation from the sutra that is found in the commentary. It reads, and this is the speech of the Buddha, the omniscient one, Katyayana, most people in the world fixate intensely on things as being existent, and others on the thought that things are non-existent. As a result of their clinging, they are not free from birth, aging, sickness, or death, from agony, crying, suffering, mental anguish, or agitation. Especially, they are not free in any way from the torments of death. And then the commentary reads, teaching in this way, the Buddha refuted both extremes of existence and non-existence. We can see from this quotation of the Buddha's teachings that he is refuting both the idea of existence and the idea of non-existence, and thereby demonstrating that the true nature of reality transcends all conceptual fabrications of what it might be. And since this is something that the Buddha taught in the Shravakayana cycle, then that's why Nagarjuna quotes it to those who follow the Shravakayana, to say, you too must assert emptiness, because that's what the Buddha taught to you as well. Now what those who follow the Shravakayana say in response is that the entire Mahayana cycle of teachings was composed by Nagarjuna as an elaboration on this one passage. Say that the entire Mahayana is just an extensive explanation of this one teaching that the Buddha actually gave.
Dena nyendu debe tanda thekpa chenpo te dene yarje sumo chusu shebare kare se na kata yenen dole deba ma do song yo mare dela je he tan deba je chenpo tsambe dene yarje sumo chure do se na sumo yore de kar chenpo re.
And so the name that the Shravaka, those who follow the Shravakayana, give to the Mahayana is, they say that it is the Dharma of development. Because it is the Dharma in which Nagarjuna expanded on this very short passage that the Buddha taught, refuting the two extremes, in an incredibly vast way. So they call it the Dharma of development or the Dharma of expansion. It's important for us to be aware of this. Second turning of the wheel of Dharma gives extensive descriptions, extensive teachings that refute the extremes of existence and non-existence. And then Nagarjuna, even more than that, wrote all of these texts that establish the validity of those teachings of the second turning of the wheel with logical reasoning. And so all of that, those who follow the Shravakayana say, is the Dharma of development or expansion, because it expands in a vast way on this very one short teaching that the Buddha gave.
Yoji sava takbata meji sava chebat tesir yoda meba lankhebe nebar mazao ton tambar yoba jena takdata ton tambar meba konata na cheta yemba sena tene nelong thato lo yeme jen thala na yoba da meben thala tene kheba nam ju ju lo du da de ba na ne bar ma sa sum.
There's another verse at the bottom of 96 that reads, existence is the view of permanence, non-existence is the view of extinction, therefore the wise do not abide either in existence or in non-existence. So at the most subtle level of these two extremes of permanence and extinction is the very view of existence on the one hand, That's, if we think something exists, then that's actually the extreme of permanence. And if we think non-existence, that's actually the extreme of extinction, of nothingness. And that's why the wise ones avoid both of these extremes of projecting either the idea of existence or the idea of non-existence onto the true nature of reality. Chapter 16 is an examination of bondage and liberation. The bondage that is referred to is the bondage of samsara, of mental afflictions, of suffering that one experiences in samsara. And liberation from that is nirvana, when one transcends these disturbing states of mind and suffering. And from the perspective of thoughts that believe that these things truly exist, then it seems like there really is actually a state of bondage and there really is a state of liberation. But when we analyze with precise knowledge, we find that there really isn't. And in this way, it's just like dreaming of being bound in iron chains and then being set free. It's just a dream. There's really no difference between these two states at all. And that's what we have to see. We have to use this example of the dream to understand that these appearances of bondage and liberation do not truly exist, that there's really no difference. And Nagarjuna proves that this is the case with logical reasoning. And the way he does that is to look at the one who is bound. If there's really bondage and then liberation, there has to be someone who's bound and then set free. So what is the nature of that? Well, you could call the one who is bound the five aggregates or skandhas, or you could call it just an individual, a sentient being. The analysis is the same. Let's say it's an individual who is bound and set free. Well, if this individual really is bound and set free, what is the quality of this individual? Are they permanent or impermanent? Well, if the individual is permanent, then they can't go from being bound to being set free because that's a change. And if someone is permanent, then that implies there's no change. So it can't be a permanent individual who changes from one state to the next, because that's totally contrary to what permanence is. Well, it also can't be an impermanent individual, because what is impermanent means that it doesn't exist in the second instant. It exists and then it's gone. That's what impermanence means. Well, someone who's impermanent doesn't have time to be bound and then be set free, because they only exist for one instant. So they'd be bound and then they'd be gone. They don't have time to go from one state to the next. And so it can't be a permanent individual who's bound and set free. It can't be an impermanent individual who's bound and set free. Therefore, bondage and liberation do not truly exist.
Megamdo, te yendo, second de la cha, jatan, pong, dan, saya, la soba, then the cassena, saya, yovare, te chaki, travate, chakye thawa te keche nyeba la mene bari kheng dhu vore. Te se na dine matapa yin na jeng tangbo jeng dine dhruva chusu me bari.
A finger snap we think of as being one thing, but that's actually a very coarse measure of it, because it's really many hundreds of different individual instants of sound, and each one of those instants can be divided into hundreds and thousands and even millions of sub-instants. And when you look at these tiny little instants, they arise and they stop, and then there's another one that's different that arises and stops. So that's what impermanence means. And if an individual is impermanent, then they'd exist for that fraction of an instant and then cease. So how could they go from one state of being bound to the next state of being set free? They wouldn't have any time to do that. That's why an impermanent individual can't be bound and then be set free. The Mahamudra and Dzogchen teachings describe a lot about how the true nature of mind, the true nature of reality, transcends bondage and liberation. But if we want to know the reasons why that's the case, then those come from this chapter called An Examination of Bondage and Liberation. Chapter 17 is an examination of karmic actions and results.
Ledan devula tapa lechiki je nyemung ledan lu namta seba podan devata tese tonjer tavata mujumlan davai ta nyemung ledan lu nam ton tamba madom na konjok to yeba chor karre konjok to yeba chor te tende nang chan to yeba te dene tanda
And from this chapter, there's a verse quoted on page 111 that reads, mental afflictions, actions, and bodies, as well as actors and results, are like cities of Gandharvas, like mirages and like dreams. So mental afflictions, the disturbing states of mind and karmic actions and the bodies we get as a result of them and the actors who perform them and all the different results of them don't truly exist. They just appear in relative reality as dependently arisen mere appearances. And what is the quality of that relative existence? How do they exist in relative reality? They are like cities of Gandharvas. They are like mirages. They are like dreams. We could also say they are all like rainbows and like water moons. Whatever example of an empty form you want to use is fine, and there are so many different examples of empty forms to help us understand this appearance and emptiness.
This
style of explanation is to say that mental afflictions, actions and bodies and so forth, when we examine with precise knowledge, searching for the ultimate nature of reality, we don't find them at all. We don't find their existence. So we conclude that they don't truly exist, but rather they just appear in relative reality as dependently arisen mere appearances, just like cities of Gandharvas, mirages and dreams.
Junze chepakab yin do dembakate mebar khelana tene chetan ra uchagre Then Sumba, this and a Maba legend deba, you meet the Druba Tamjil and the Tamjil and deba.
The
this and a Chaitanya by your mother.
The stage of slight analysis at that level, when we analyze, we refute true existence and assert that these things do not exist. But if we just stopped there, then that would be like nihilism, because we'd be asserting non-existence as the true nature of reality. So we don't stop there, but we carry on to the level of thorough analysis, and at that level realize that the true nature of reality transcends the ideas of existence and non-existence both. And that's why there's no fault of nihilism in this view.
Then a dambar mina yon dambar kembe namdo ntrupa te dene tuni gonde janzare.
These things do not truly exist, but nevertheless, we think that they do. And these thoughts that cling to true existence are precisely what it are to be purified by meditating on emptiness. That's the function of meditating on emptiness, is to purify the thoughts that cling to true existence.
Then Rabzi pa da da chuta pare, da da chuta pande, sabakirabji nyingbo ndavo lojong se na, da da chuta pade nyingbo rende ya boyo pare. Then sabakirab kanga, tamji Rabzi nikitabde lojong se na, Dada Chutabala Nikita Govundu.
Chapter 18 is an examination of self and phenomena. And because it's about the emptiness of the self of the individual and the lack of self-entity in phenomena, it's like the essence of the entire text. So if you just wanted to study one chapter that's the essence of the text, it would be this one. But when you study the whole text altogether, then actually in terms of an explanation that a teacher gives, it's not necessary to explain too much more about this one particular chapter. This whole chapter in its entirety is comprised of 12 verses.
Then it's about here, Razi, you get something, Kanka Lobjon say to two men, Nimbotena, then Dada Chitapa.
So if you didn't have time to study the whole text, then reading those 12 verses that comprise this 18th chapter would be the way to go.
Then Razi Chukapa Tutabare.
Chapter 19 is an examination of time. And on page 124, there's the verse that I selected from this chapter for the book. And it reads, "If the present and the future depended on the past, the present and the future would exist in the past."
Basically,
the reason why the three times don't truly exist is that the past is finished, so it doesn't exist anywhere. The future hasn't arisen yet, so it doesn't exist anywhere. And the present doesn't abide for even an instant. And therefore, you can't find the present anywhere either. And we can see also from our own experience that time does not exist. Because whenever we wanted to measure time in the old days, then they used to use water clocks and how the water would drip and how much water had gone. And if you, so you looked at the water to know what time it was. And if you didn't have a clock like that, then you would look maybe at the shadows and see what time it was. Nowadays, you look at little sticks moving on your wrist. So you never see time. You only see these forms. You never see time itself. Because time doesn't really exist. Sometimes you hear the gong of a clock to tell you what time it is, but that sound is not time. Therefore, time does not exist with any nature of its own. Also, there is no common or objective time on this planet. We know that because in some places on the planet where it's daytime, in other places it's nighttime. So what time is it really? You can't say. There is no objective time or common time. And the emptiness of the objectivity of time is something easy to realize these days for this reason. Even America doesn't have a common or objective time. It has different times for every place. Also, there's no common or objective day or night. And for this reason too, there is no objective friend or enemy. Chapter 20 is an examination of collections.
Then the tsokpa tapa te ngobo tamje tanda nagsar tang thengwa tang mama tang goi ta la soba na tso tang yin na ya tsokpa jin ya tsokpa ye ma do bare tsok jin ma do bare.
The point of this chapter, an examination of collections, is to point out that all things are like forests, like garlands of beads, like armies, in the sense that they are collections of smaller parts with no entity that possesses the collection that exists itself, no basis for the collection that truly exists. Take, for example, a head of hair. From far away, it looks like there is one thing, one head of hair. But if you cut all the hair off, then you don't see anything till you get up close, and then you see just a bunch of little individual hairs, because there never was any entity there in the first place. There was nothing there that possessed this collection. It's just a mere collection of parts.
If you look at
associations or collections of people that take the form of groups or different types of organizations, then if these organizations truly existed, then they could only ever be small or big or whatever because the basis of them would truly exist. But there is no basis. They have no essence. There's nothing there that possesses the parts of the collection. And therefore, they can grow big, they can grow small, and sometimes they can just disintegrate completely because there's nothing substantially there in the first place. Chapter 21 is an examination of emergence and decay, and this examination takes this form. Emergence and decay can't occur simultaneously. They can't be one thing because they are different events. They are opposite events, emergence and decay. So they can't be one thing. But they also can't be different because they can't exist independently. You can't have decay without emergence. You can't have emergence without decay. And since they can't be one and they can't be different, then they don't truly exist. In short, if emergence and decay were one thing, then that would be the existence of two contradictory events occurring precisely at the same time, which is impossible. They can't be one thing. They can't be different, because if they were different, they'd have no connection. If they were two separately existent entities, and if that were the case, then whatever emerged would never decay. And whatever decayed would never emerge, because emergence and decay would be different and couldn't have any connection. And that's why they don't truly exist, because they can't be one and they can't be two. So what are they? They're like emergence and decay that appear in a dream. Just like if you see a building go up in a dream and then come down, then it's just a mere appearance. It's not really happening. It's emergence and decay that are dependently arisen, mere appearance. And when you can gain confidence, certainty, that emergence and decay, arising and ceasing, birth and death, do not truly exist, then the suffering you experience from emergence and decay will be greatly reduced. And when you realize that in the true nature of reality, when you realize directly the true nature of reality beyond birth and decay, you won't suffer from them at all. The only possession Milarepa had was a clay pot, and he carried it with him from one cave to the next. And one time he dropped it and it broke, and then he sang a very lovely song about this broken clay pot.
And
this song teaches examples of impermanence and also about how things don't truly exist, both. Chapter 22 is an examination of the Tathagata.
And
this verse on page 142 is very good.
Very good.
It reads, the Tathagata cannot be called empty, nor not empty, nor both, nor neither. Use these terms as mere conventional designations. The Buddha, in the Buddha's true nature, transcends the concepts of empty, not empty, both and neither. And all phenomena are the same. They all, in their true nature, transcend the concepts of empty, not empty, both and neither.
The yin chikwe sanje jine lok tupa da drava yendo, simchin jine lo la yang tupa da drava re, de yendo chutam je tuja jingando nyambar hibara, nyambani. Tuja jingando, tuja jingando nyambata, mwola trama mepa, duni tabar nyambata, kunzo mula chuta tabar nyambari.
The true nature of the Buddhas is beyond conceptual fabrication. The true nature of sentient beings is beyond conceptual fabrication. In fact, the true nature of all phenomena transcends concepts. And this is called the equality of being beyond conceptual fabrication. All phenomena are equal because in their true nature they are all equally beyond any concept of what they might be. And at the same time, in the true nature of all phenomena, there is not the slightest stain. And all phenomena are equally free of stain in their true nature. So all phenomena have the equality or share the equality of being originally pure. And in terms of the appearances of phenomena, in relative reality, all phenomena are equal because they are all equally like dreams, illusions, and water moons.
Tani yuta sumba singilo tabare. Singilo tabale, Jomachiva tava da zuni dava tedala, dova dana madub, joyan kalanjushis of us.
Chapter 23 is an examination of mistakes. And here on page 149, at the bottom, the verse, one verse from this chapter reads, how could it be possible for sentient beings who are like illusions or objects that are like reflections to be either pleasant or unpleasant? Sentient beings and objects are like illusions and reflections. And therefore, the projections of them being pleasant or unpleasant don't truly exist. And that's why mistakes that arise from projecting these ideas of being pleasant or unpleasant don't truly exist either. So there are about five verses are quoted in this chapter, in the Sun of Wisdom, an examination of mistakes. And if you read them carefully on your own, their meaning will be clear.
Then Kanla tongpa nyi rongwa tela tamje rongwa jor. Kanla tongpa nyi marongwa tela tamje marongwa jor sombore. Tongpa nyi rongwa denpa yedam konjo da lejum de jeva ngam se kanka tebare. Dendum yena tene tamje mante banjur. Rekun nyi nesi yabar.
Chapter 24 is an examination of the Four Noble Truths, and there's a verse on page 156 that reads, if emptiness is possible, then everything is possible, but if emptiness is impossible, then nothing else is possible either. So when emptiness is the true nature of phenomena, then the Four Noble Truths, the three rare and supreme ones, karmic, cause, and result, all of them are possible. All of them can appear. But if things truly existed, then none of these could appear at all. Their appearance would be logically impossible if they truly existed.
Nyangin deba juusongware. Pantop len deba, takche len deba, tenka len deba, chunyi te rangin nyangdere.
Chapter 25 is an examination of nirvana. And on page 164, there's a very nice verse. Nothing to abandon, nothing to attain, nothing extinct, nothing permanent, no cessation, no arising. This is how nirvana is taught to be. This verse teaches how dharmata, the essential nature of reality, nirvana, transcends there being anything to abandon or attain, transcends anything going extinct or staying the same, transcends arising and transcends cessation. It's beyond all of these conceptual
projections.
Chapter 26 is an examination of the 12 links of existence. The 12 links of existence describe the causes and results one after the other that constitute the way that one goes around and around in samsara. And so this chapter is very good because it analyzes that. And the basic conclusion of it is that the first link doesn't really exist, ignorance. And since ignorance doesn't truly exist, then all the other links up through aging and death do not truly exist either. And that is excellent. And this is in harmony with the teaching in the Heart of Wisdom Sutra, where the sutra states there is no ignorance, nor any ending of ignorance, no aging or death, nor any ending of aging and death, and nothing in between. This chapter proves with logical reasoning, with many logical reasonings, the validity of these teachings from the sutra.
Tene marek pa denba tronna tele sungon ko ba dendo re marek pa rangi je maro pese na ko ba rangi je maro.
If ignorance truly existed, then the samsara that arises from ignorance would also be truly existent. But since ignorance does not truly exist, then the samsara that arises, that appears to arise from it, doesn't truly exist either.
Nyeden ba tava tava re tava tava te ngupu ma nam je tava ngemba so den ba tropa dobe se no tene tava la ta che ta mare tava ngemba so den ba ma tropa kare se no tava ngemba khelen ba bu kaza ma tropa se no tene khelen yang ma tropa re.
Chapter 27 is an examination of views. And this is a very good chapter because it examines the idea that those who believe that things truly exist put forth, which is that inferior views are truly existent. And Nagarjuna proves that inferior views do not truly exist. And the main reason why is that the individual who holds inferior views does not truly exist. There's no self there who has an inferior view. And if there's no one really there who has an inferior view, then there can't really be any inferior view. So if someone has clinging to inferior views as being truly existent, or clinging to the idea that other religious and philosophical traditions are bad because they have bad views, then one should especially study this chapter, the examination of views. If the one who held an inferior or a bad view were truly existent, then that would be in contradiction to the teachings on selflessness. So it can't be like that. In one verse on page 179 reads, "Since all things are empty, why would anyone, anywhere, at any time, view things as being permanent or anything
else?"
Since all phenomena are emptiness, then how could the one who holds wrong views, how could the wrong views themselves truly exist? They couldn't. So let's recite this verse together.
Since all things are empty, why would anyone anywhere at any time view things as being permanent or anything else?
Now all of the views, all of the assertions of those who believe that things truly exist have been perfectly refuted, and so there is no need to write anymore. And so the last verse of the text is the concluding homage to the Buddha, holding us on page 181, holding us in your incredible wisdom and love. You taught us the genuine Dharma to help us abandon all views. I prostrate before you, Gotama. Let's recite it together. Holding us in your incredible wisdom and love, you taught us the genuine Dharma to help us abandon all views. I prostrate before you, Gotama. The reason why I covered all the remaining chapters in the morning session is so that we could have time for questions in the afternoon, and also to have received this overview of all the chapters will make the questions go well. And in the meantime, before the session, you should read each individual chapter's quotation from the sutras that is the basis for that chapter's explanation. And also, at the beginning of each chapter, read the reason why Nagarjuna composed that particular chapter. Then the questions will go very well. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings.
Nendere nyemo dele,
tendele,
nyeme kongyang dele,
nyem sentakyo dele,
kuchok sumje tashi.